This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Bill Anderson, CEO of Bayer Ag. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Bayer's Bill Anderson next. America's 11,000 sugar beet and sugarcane farmers count on a strong U.S. sugar policy to keep American consumers supplied with an essential ingredient. Better yet, it's designed to cost taxpayers nothing. These farmers support more than 151,000 jobs throughout the sugar supply chain in both urban and rural communities. They contribute over $23 billion to the economy each year and help keep it sweet in America. Learn how the Farm Bill supports sugar crop farmers and workers at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The economic challenges facing crop farmers today has been well documented by commodity groups, the USDA, and by recent hearings before the House and Senate Agriculture Committees. Bill Anderson, CEO of Bayer Ag, says they can see the impact of tighter margins as farmers plan for a new crop year.
There is some movement when commodity prices are down. There's a movement towards lower end products or less acres planted, obviously. So we feel it. We know that, you know, the farmers across America are having to work harder than ever. But unfortunately, with the current commodity prices, you know, the profit just isn't there for many of them. And so we're definitely, in solidarity with the farmers.
In working closely with farmers, they make obvious their desire for sustainability and also productivity. It's not one or the other. Does Bayer share that goal?
Yeah. In fact, we have as our mission as a company is health for all, hunger for none. And the health for all, obviously that refers to our important role we play in medicines. But the hunger for none, you know, when you look at that and say, well, what does that mean? You know, how could you achieve that? And right away you're struck by the fact that means we need to be able to produce more food in the future because we got more people in the future, but we're losing farmland, many parts of the globe and parts of America are losing water supplies. So we need to be able to grow more food with less water, less land. That means that land needs to be higher quality soil, more organic matter. And we need to also be more careful with use of chemicals. I know no farmer uses any more crop protection products than they have to because it's a cost, but also they want to have the best land, the best conditions around their land. This is a core part of our vision as we look to the future, developing new crop protection products, developing new seeds and traits, and also our digital farming efforts, which are very much in aid of precision farming.
So what is the target for Bayer? There's work genetically that's being done. There's work that's being done in the soil biome with microbial activity. What do you see as the future and the area of where you and industry are concentrating on to continue to help producers achieve their goals?
Yeah. I mean, it's really a combination. For example, we're working on next generation corn rootworm traits. Corn rootworm is among the most damaging pests known to farmers. I think it costs something like $2 billion annually in the U.S. to our nation's corn crop. We're working on novel traits, you know, more effective at taking out that pest. So that's an approach, biotech traits. We have new tools to do that. So we have conventional gene splicing, and now we have gene editing. And that allows us to sort of come at some novel problems that we couldn't solve with whole gene splicing and do a more precise editing of the genes. So those products are going to be coming in the next decade, but especially gene editing probably more in the second half of the decade. there's a general move towards precision development of pesticides. So, you know, insecticides that are more targeted at the insects in question, fungicides likewise. We're bringing also more herbicide tolerant traits. For example, we're going to be launching HT4 soy and corn. This is basically soy and corn that's tolerant to 5 herbicides. We've got the 6th herbicide trait behind that in the pipeline. So those are coming. So, for example, HT4 soybeans will be tolerant to glyphosate, glufosinate, dicamba, 2,4-D, and quizalofa. So it just gives farmers the ability to plant and not have to know, like, which herbicide is going to be most appropriate, because then you can see when the weeds emerge, what's the choice. Hybrid wheat. People have dreamed about this since the advent of hybrid corn. You know, what if we could do this with wheat? I mean, think of a revolution that that would have in wheat farming. That's something we're really hopeful for the 2030s, to offer higher yields, better quality grain, you know, more efficient use of inputs like fertilizer, improved resiliency. And when you do all that, when you grow more food with less land, you reduce environmental impact. That's more land that can be dedicated, you know, reserved for wildlife, for wetlands. So we think it's really, you know, this combination of novel chemistry, of novel seeds and traits, continue to improve the germplasm, and then finally digital farming, which, again, the advances there continue to impress.
How big of a challenge has been from the legal front of those who challenge you and the safety of glyphosate, a product that was brought on back in the early 70s?
You mentioned our ability to produce food for such a larger population. Farmers have been key to that, and glyphosate has been key to that. And it's really helped American agriculture kind of soar over others in the world. Now, at this point, glyphosate is widely adopted throughout the world. But, of course, farmers in America, they depend on glyphosate to run their business successfully and to preserve that ability to produce food for the nation and to export food. It's also true that this vital tool, glyphosate, is produced right here in the U.S. There are alternatives, but they're made in other countries, or they're less effective or more expensive. And farmers will tell you, you know, glyphosate's the gold standard that they need to ensure plentiful, safe yields for them and a reliable food supply for consumers. So, unfortunately, a lot of times lawmakers in Washington, states around the country, they don't always know that. If they're from an urban district, it's not maybe as obvious. But those lawmakers have a chance now to act to make sure that the litigation industry's tactics don't threaten food security for America. And I really can't overstate how critical it is for all of us that farmers have access to this tool. You know, these unfounded attacks on glyphosate, this is a safe and repeatedly studied and approved product. That these attacks, they put America at risk. And if something doesn't change, it could allow another country to take America's place as a leader in agriculture and food production.
So while you've been in the courtroom defending glyphosate, I wonder if it's not a bigger issue of the question of our regulatory process in the U.S., if the science says that it's safe, is it safe? And if it is, then where does and how does this litigation come to be?
It's a challenging situation in the U.S. where companies can spend decades running studies and providing evidence for regulators, and the regulators do a great job, and they review all the evidence, and they say a product's safe. But then that same question gets litigated in courtrooms with non-experts and with a very, I guess I would say, a partial evidence base where not all those studies are allowed to be presented. This is not it's not a regulatory stable environment if the courts can undermine the regulatory system that way. And what we find is when juries have access to the full slate of information, we win the cases. And in fact, we've won the majority of cases that go to trial. But we don't always get a fair trial, and that's why we're appealing these ones that we've lost. But at the big picture level, okay, there's all kinds of studies. You can go on the internet and you can find all kinds of things. But the gold standard would be human health studies. and the National Cancer Institute's Ag Health Study, which has studied nearly 90,000 farmers and their spouses over decades, found no link between Roundup or surfactants, other chemicals in the Roundup formulations, no correlation between these and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is the claim that they're making. So it would be devastating to farmers and the price of food if it wasn't available. And so, yeah, your listeners, they can contact their lawmakers and ask for regulatory clarity, because that's what we're asking for. We're not asking for some kind of blanket immunity. We're asking that the law is clarified, that if the EPA says a product is safe, that label is the gold standard, and it can't just be relitigated over and over again.
Well, in the fall of 23, glyphosate reapproved by the European Commission for another 10 years. This includes Germany. So how can the crop protection industry move ahead into the more intricate nature of agriculture and focusing on research when so many billions of dollars are caught up in litigation and at risk? Does it affect where you research? Does it affect what you might offer producers to help them be more sustainable if you're challenged this way in the courts or allowed to be challenged this way in the courts?
Jeff, that's exactly the point. I mentioned these novel pesticides that we're able to bring. These are pesticides that have really great advantages in terms of selectivity, sustainability. But who's to say that the same thing wouldn't happen to one of those as has happened to glyphosate in the future? And so, you know, the incentive to innovate, the incentive to make more sustainable products is strongly undermined by the current state of litigation in America.
The Modern Ag Alliance surveyed recently and discovered that consumers trust farmers, and they worry that litigation will threaten food security, and they worry that this litigation will bring higher food costs to the country. But yet the litigation continues. Is there work in states? Is there work in Washington to bring finally a measure that says this is the science and the science is so?
So there are, as you mentioned, the Modern Ag Alliance has proposed language in legislation in a number of states, as well as in the U.S. Congress, that would clarify that if a manufacturer has complied with the EPA label, that they have satisfied the requirements for health and safety warnings. It's that simple. It's not more than that. It's not less than that. And, you know, we think this is just common sense. It should be common sense that that's already so, but it needs legislative clarity because that's been clouded by the litigation industry. That clarity has been obscured. And there's an opportunity to do this. And that's why, you know, I would encourage farmers that are concerned about this topic to contact their legislators and their policymakers and let them know.
How long can you continue to sell a product that is costing you this much money in the court system?
Yeah, that's a very hard question. To give you the scale of it, we are the largest funder of R&D in agriculture in the world, and we are spending about the same amount of money per year on litigation as we spend on R&D for the world. You know, that's bad news for farmers. That's bad news for, frankly, for tomorrow's consumers, because that will come out of the innovation that can keep food prices down, that can ensure reliable food supply. We're coming to the end of what we can do with glyphosate without some sort of legislative remedy or clarity from the courts, because we're producing glyphosate. It's subject to generic competition. We're the only U.S. producer, but we can't afford to continue to run a money-losing business. And so that's part of our appeal to the public, is to say, hey, if it's important, this essential agriculture tool, to have it available in America, and by the way, we see this now, borders are becoming more important. You know, you can't assume that products from other countries are always going to be available. And so we think it's very important that we would be able to continue to provide it. But by the way, only the American producer gets sued. Producers from other countries, they don't get sued. They could just fold their operations if they have lawsuits, but we're committed to America. We're producing in America. We do our R&D in America, and so the litigation industry knows that.
I read the toxicology reports on glyphosate in comparison to other products. Table salt and vinegar are more toxic than using glyphosate around the home, around the farm. And yet, when you read online of ways that you can make your own pesticide, most of them include vinegar and salt. It doesn't appear to me from the toxicology reports that this is the volatile substance that's been made out to be.
I'm not a toxicology expert, but I can read the EPA pesticide monitoring program reports, and you can see how safe is the food supply. And you can see that the vast majority of food samples have no traces of pesticides, much less not above the acceptable limits. I think in the most recent year, on the ranking of pesticides by how frequently they were found in the food supply, glyphosate was number 31. So were 30 other pesticides more commonly found in foods, including at legal limits. And I think one has to ask, why all the attention on glyphosate? I think you have to see that there's probably more than a coincidence that that's where there's been big paychecks for the litigation industry.
So the consumer is asking where food comes from and how food is produced. And producers have suggested that in order to follow climate smart agriculture practices, it takes tools. And without those tools, they're forced to go back to production in the 70s and 80s that includes a lot more tillage and a lot less concentration on developing the soil biome. Do you share the same goal as producers to be more sustainable and also be more productive?
Well, yeah, that's probably one of the single biggest benefits of a product like glyphosate is that it does enable the no-till or conservation tillage approaches. And you can see it very clearly if you drive across America or you drive across Europe. You know, the farmers in Europe are still plowing their fields. In the U.S., I mean, they're not buying plows. This is what we've enabled. Much lower energy costs, lower labor, less runoff into aquifers, less soil erosion, richer soil. This is part of the appeal we need to make to conservation-minded people that, hey, these tools are key to promoting soil health and to promoting conservation. And so we need more information and less misinformation.
What's the next frontier in agriculture?
The idea of what we can do beneath the surface is fascinating. And, you know, probably one of the most exciting areas of research, and we hope that maybe this can move from research to, you know, having a meaningful impact in fields in the next years, is around nitrogen sequestration by plants other than legumes. Corn plants that have bacteria around their root structure that would pull in atmospheric nitrogen in a fixable way. That would be a big deal. You know, imagine corn plants providing some significant amount of their own nitrogen requirements. Huge impact on the energy intensity of farming, the cost. That area, I mentioned hybrid wheat. Again, that could be a game-changing area. Another huge potential place for, I'd say, the intersection of environmental sustainability and farm incomes is sustainable aviation fuel. In the next 5 to 10 years, some of these things becoming reality, that's probably some of the biggest breakthroughs we could imagine.
What more could you do if you didn't have to spend so much money on litigation?
Absolutely. By the way, on that, do you know the bill for litigation last year in the U.S. is estimated at $600 billion, which is 2.1% of GDP. But to make that very real for listeners, that's an average of over $4,000 per U.S. household. And so your listeners that are hearing this and thinking, oh, litigation, you know, that's too bad for Bayer. No, actually, it's too bad for everybody. You know, most American households don't have $4,000 of, excess income that they can afford to be paying into the litigation industry. And, you know, that where does that show up? It shows up in home and car insurance, huge litigation nightmares in that space. It shows up in medical insurance costs and medical costs. Again, gold mine for litigators. And it shows up in the cost of products or the unavailability of new products from industries. And so I think this is a topic that must get reined in because the trial lawyers are having off with hard-earned money from American families, and that needs to stop.
How long does it take you to develop a new product from the time of discovery to the time of sale? How long and how much?
It depends on the product, but I think the current estimate for a novel pesticide is something around $300 million, and the time is maybe 12 to 15 years, depending on where you count the starting of that process. Personally, I'm pretty conservative on this. I think that's not inappropriate. We're talking about the food supply, and we should be conservative. We should have very thorough testing of products before we put them into the food supply. And so I think that's highly appropriate. I think strong, tough regulations makes for better product and better public trust in products over time. So I'm good with that. I think we just need to make sure that the rules are enforced clearly and that we don't have some sort of regulatory anarchy where the courts are second guessing the regulators. The exorbitant cost of fighting back against our scientifically unsupported litigation have robbed American agriculture of the equivalent of 5 years worth of R&D investments. This is what blocks us from investing in desperately needed innovation to manage these changing conditions and to ensure that we have solutions for our children and their children. This is an important policy topic for everyone.
Well, Bill Anderson, we want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic and to talk about such an important issue for the agriculture industry. Thank you for being here. You're our guest, and our guests on Open Mic have the last word.
Well, I want to end by just a big thank you to the American farmers. Your partnership with everyone in the agricultural inputs field, the innovators. We have a lot of innovators at Bayer, but our partner farmers that are testing the seeds, testing the novel products, they're real heroes in the innovation chain. And we're really grateful for everything you guys do, both to make the new products for tomorrow, but provide food for today. So thanks to all of you. And thanks, Jeff, for having me on the show.
Our thanks to Bill Anderson, CEO of Bayer Ag, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.